You're listening to 830 AM KSDP in Sandpoint, Alaska, K201DA in King Cove, Alaska.
Nels Klein has rightly picked up accolades for his guitar work over the last two decades in Wilco, but he's never lost his love of jazz, recording on several dozen albums across his career. His latest is the Inspired Concentric Quartet. Rounding out the quartet is Ingrid Laubrock, Tom Rainey, and Chris Lightcap. They're all great players, Klein says, but there's also another thing that makes it special for him.
The people that I have the most, I guess, enjoyable and inspired moments with are the ones who can really listen while they're playing, and not everyone can do this.
Coming up, Klein, a guy who's played on hundreds of records, tells me about the types of people he likes to collaborate with and the feeling you get when everyone finds their groove together.
The only thing that feels natural to me is spontaneous improvisation.
Nels Klein coming up. I'm Kaleo. This is World Cafe. I know I'm late to the party, but Nels is one of a kind. Such a great guy. And really instructive when it comes to learning a little bit about the craft. It's coming up in just a few minutes after Spoon.
I won't be this soldier.
From NPR, it's World Cafe. Yo, I am Kaleo. Nels Klein is a guy you want with you in the studio. In a career that spanned over 40 years, he's played with hundreds of musicians, dealing in everything from avant-garde jazz to lo-fi punk, alongside folks like Mike Watt, Thurston Moore, Yoko Ono, and Carla Bozulich. Of course, he's been the cool, steady hand in Wilco for the last two decades. So when the LA-born composer and guitarist gathers some great players for a new album, you know we would pay close attention. Concentric Quartet features saxophonist Ingrid Laubrock, drummer Tom Rainey, and double bassist Chris Lightcap. Coming up, Nels talks about making Concentric Quartet and his time living in New York City during the 70s. Plus, as a guy who's played with a lot of great musicians over the years, he shares what he looks for in a collaborator. It's good stuff. Our conversation kicks off with a discussion of the opening track on Concentric Quartet, The Returning Angel. It has a bit of an ominous vibe with his guitar playing. Dare I say, noir. So I wanted to know why it leads off the album.
Well, in reality, I wanted to preface the piece that follows it, called The 23, with something pensive and possibly beautiful to create, I guess, a long kind of slow build into a kind of groovy tune that's not really particularly interesting compositionally. The Returning Angel, title-wise, is kind of an odd when I pondered it later, because I have a lot of angel titles in my songs, yeah. My song titles, and many of them are basically kind of a reflection, or in a way maybe even an homage to the poet Rafael Alberti, the Spanish poet, who has many, many poems that are the this angel, the that angel, the vengeful angel, the angry angel, the this angel. And The Returning Angel was a title that I thought in some way had something to do with the mood of the piece, which is like a lot of my angel pieces. My first record under my own name is called Angelica. And it starts with a piece called Angel of Death. And as I listened to a recording of The Returning Angel in its sort of nascent state, I realized the form of it is very similar to this piece called Angel of Death, and that I had come up with this title, The Returning Angel, independent of that knowledge. So now they're kind of connected in my mind, but at the time of writing the piece and devising it and titling it, it was not in my mind. But it's a very similar, pensive, rubato experience, both these pieces.
Here on World Cafe. I did some back of the napkin math between all of your releases and guests as a collaborator. You know, you have played with hundreds, but I believe over 1,000 musicians on record in dozens of different configurations. And, you know, you wanted to play and make music with these three people: Ingrid Laubrock on sax, Chris Lightcap on bass, Tom Rainey handling drums. What was special about those three people from your experiences improvising with them? What did you sense that you're like, we got to get into a studio and do this?
Well, I think that overall, I'm a band guy, and I know that the so-called jazz world tends to be extremely modular in the personnel department. I'm not particularly a jazz guy anyway. I'm a kind of almost jazz guy, but I like to rock, as everyone probably is aware at this point, besides improvise. But it was just a really good chemistry with these people. Yeah, I'm surrounded by people who are better than me all the time. And this makes me step up. You know, I mean, this is, so they're inspiring me, but it was beyond their skill set and the fact they're inspiring me. These are very lovely people, and that matters to a band guy. And so I often devise music to, as I said before, to feature the voices and the skills of these people specifically. And sometimes when I'm not doing that, which does happen, I just ask, you know, is this song okay to be playing with you guys? Because, I mean, at the very beginning, I had a very different idea of what this band would sort of tackle, if you will, you know, or what direction we were going to go in, which was more chamber jazz, more modest, more abstract, and probably generally more like, you know, Time of No Sirens or Down Close, some of these pieces, or The Bag even, which was very up, but dedicated to Tom Rainey. But then we kind of started rocking out a bit, and I had that piece that I keep mentioning, the 23. And I remember asking them if this piece is worth playing, like, you know, because it really wasn't, that piece really wasn't devised with me thinking of specifically, say, Ingrid playing the melody on tenor. Right. So I didn't know if playing what I was probably calling at the time my goofy folk jazz, if that would be something that we could make ours. And ultimately we did. And I think that on that piece particularly, when we started playing it in earnest with, I guess, what I would have to call our sound, that kind of opened the door for me to write a couple other groovy tunes. About these individuals very specifically, you know, and the reason it ever even happened was because I was playing in a trio with Tom and Chris around New York. Well, we played songs by Pharoah Sanders and Gabor Szabo and Sonny Greenwich. And, you know, I was ringing bells and I was really just in a different space. And when I added Ingrid that one night improvising was when I think everything kind of shifted.
You're listening to World Cafe. We're talking with Nels Klein. His new album is Concentric Quartet. I want to talk about the song Satomi for a moment. It's a tribute to Satomi Matsuzaki of Deerhoof. Why did you want to write this piece for her?
Well, this was one of the pieces written during lockdown. Mm-hmm. When the pandemic hit and a very good friend of mine and my wife's entreated us to please leave Brooklyn and get out of our building with hundreds of people in it. Yeah. And come up to a place in the woods where which he found for us so we could sort of, I don't know, be safe, let's say.
Yeah.
And and you know, I have to recall that Asians were getting pretty bad vibes on the street and on the subway at this point. No one's wearing masks yet. And our good friend Satomi was having to go to Japan, I think twice during lockdown, because of family health issues that she had to confront in Japan. And at the same time, we moved out of Brooklyn a few months later and put our stuff in storage and have just sort of stayed roving around upstate New York. And even during that phase of our life, Satomi was just this solid, strong, and caring friend. But I was very worried about her. Well, we both were, my wife Yuka and I were very worried about her and her travels during this period and having to deal with her family issues which were, you know, pretty hairy. So I wanted to write a piece that was at the beginning, my celebration, if you will, of her strength and charisma and her energy in Deerhoof. And it's a very Deerhoofian, intentionally a very Deerhoofian piece. Really intended to be sad, but it was supposed to be caring. And in a way, it, you know, with the last chord, this kind of major chord with a suspension, optimistic, you know, kind of a prayer of sorts. But I am happy with it. And I have to say, besides the fact that we love her so much, she really loves the piece.
Talking with Nels Klein here on World Cafe. I know you grew up in Los Angeles, and I did read that it was your dream to come to New York in the 70s. Why were you focused on that? Was it jazz? Was it music? Was it a change of pace?
Wow. Well, it's all of the above, Stephen, but particularly the music. But I also have to say that as opposed to my twin brother, Alex, I just cotton to New York, to the vibe and just to the madness of it. And, you know, we came here with our family in the late 60s a couple of times, 67 and 68. And so in 76, my brother Alex and I came to New York City on a jazz pilgrimage. And our parents, who love New York, kind of made it a what they called a late high school graduation present. And they stipulated, and I'm telling this story to give you an idea of how important my parents are to my whole being. They stipulated that they would pay for the trip. We would stay with our friend Larry in the West Village, but we had to go to see Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf with Colleen Dewhurst and Ben Gazzara. And we had to go see Stephen Sondheim's new musical at the time, Pacific Overtures, which is now considered a classic, but at the time didn't do such a big business, I don't think. But it was beautiful. So we said, okay, fine. And then we went to, you know, hear Loft Jazz, so-called. The first thing we did was go to the Tin Palace on a Sunday afternoon and hear Air. And so, you know, Henry Threadgill, Steve McCall, and Fred Hopkins. And then there in the audience is like Dave Holland and Paul Motion. And we had met Oliver Lake. So there we said, hey, Oliver, we're in New York, you know. And it was insane. So I thought this was heaven. And you have to also remember that the city was bankrupt at this point. You know, it's a really, for a person from, you know, I guess Los Angeles in many regards is pretty much just this giant sprawling suburb. So with this kind of West Los Angeles suburban mentality, yet almost laser-like focus on creative improvised music of sorts, this was foreign country. You know, I just didn't even know how to order coffee in New York City, you know, but I really loved it.
Yeah. And your beginning of experience of New York City is, you know, this bustling culture that might even feel a little bit like the Wild West on the East Coast. But your last experience in New York City, I think, was during the pandemic, living between a police station and a hospital, I think, or a station.
Fire station. Yeah, we lived in Prospect Heights and we had a fire station on the block and then a police station around the corner.
That must have been surreal at the end.
Well, we were lucky that the building was set in from the street. Mm-hmm. So for some reason, that made a huge difference. You know, when we were living in our friend's place in the West Village and a truck would go by, all the windows would, rattle and whatever. So even with the fire station and whatnot, the Brooklyn place was a lot quieter. But yeah, when the pandemic started, of course, it was nonstop sirens.
Is that the origin story for Time of No Sirens, or how that might be connected to that experience?
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's so tiresome now to have a pandemic themed or related piece to talk about. But I have to say that certainly Time of No Sirens was written as initially as a solo guitar composition with tons of space in it. And so suddenly we were thrust into this strange wooded area. And the next thing, it was snow everywhere. This was March of 2020. We adapted to this really quickly. And I wasn't feeling super inspired to write at first, but I'm sitting around with my little silver tone guitar and playing little tidbits of ideas. And eventually this piece became Time of No Sirens, which I recorded kind of over and over again on my phone, trying to get just the right chord for this. And, you know, it's completely a composed guitar piece, very skeletal. And that piece is the pandemic piece for me, you know, from me, because we were suddenly thrust into this completely contrasting environment. And the silence was deafening, we could say.
Cafe. We're talking with Nels Cline. His new album is Concentric Quartet. You have said in the past, and I mean, based on the numbers themselves, it's no joke, you're a born collaborator. What are you looking for in a collaborator? I know that can be a very open-ended question, but do you have specific things you want out of someone, whether it's how agreeable they are, how talented they are, what they can improvise mm-hmm. with? Do you have a sort of base desire in you for certain aspects of people?
That's a really good question, Stephen. I think that maybe there are kind of two categories, if I have to categorize, that just popped into my head, because I don't think I've ever been asked this question specifically. So the people who have, you know, let's say massive skills in the so-called jazz world, or they know an incredible amount of extended techniques and they know everything about the avant-garde improvised music scene, all of that's great. But the people that I have the most, enjoyable and inspired moments with are the ones who can really listen while they're playing. And not everyone can do this. A lot of musicians, and not so many, I guess, jazz improvisers, but a lot of musicians just play what they know, and they're not used to listening to other people while they're playing what they know. For me, it's incredibly exciting. And the level, for example, like I can do this with Ingrid, because we're listening to each other while we're playing, and this recording, I think, without me thinking about it architecturally or conceptually so much at the time, features the two of us kind of, you know, one of the terms is sparring. I'm not sure if sparring is really the right word, but I'll use it because I'm not coming up with a better word. It's a kind of intertwining of melodic playing, where it's, I don't know, maybe it's more like Dixieland than it is about, you know, the long sovereign virtuosic solo, right, which I'm personally on guitar pretty uncomfortable with at this point. And I'd be happy to hear Ingrid play a nice long virtuosic solo, but I don't want to be the one playing one at this point so much. So that's the one category. The other category is being able to in any way enter into some kind of collaboration with somebody whose style and voice, if you will, is so completely their own that they're almost on another planet, and a planet that I want to live on for a while. So somebody that falls into that category, for example, would be Thurston Moore. And when we had our duo going, my desire was to go kind of as far into Thurston's sonic world as I could, because that's a happy place for me just as a listener. And so we had some jolly improvising times. And so that's the other thing. Maybe it's just the iconoclast is the other number two definition of somebody I like to play with. And then the challenge is to interact and be myself, and at the same time, you know, react in a way that's, I guess, coherent, and even possibly takes the music to a new place that makes somebody like Anthony Braxton happy, you know?
Yeah.
Improvising from the ground up with anyone in these categories that we have now created is one of the only things I feel confident doing. And it's also incredibly fun. So that's kind of, you know, my happy place. And then for some reason I write tunes, and I do really like playing other people's music. Obviously now I guess I've been playing these Jeff Tweedy songs for about 21 years.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, well, he knows how to write a song. So, and I like our band, you know, I like the way we play together, and I like the people in the band. And this goes back to how we started this interview in a way. It's like the band thing.
Yeah.
When it works, and I guess it's incredibly rare. I know so many people, especially when they're young and they're playing basically in basements in rock bands and whatever, they have band members that they have to contend with that don't even show up, or, yeah, you know, don't come to practice, and et cetera, et cetera. I've never been saddled with people like this in my life. You know, I guess everybody's a nerd like me, and we're responsible citizens that want the music to be as good as it can be. And then when we improvise together, you know, we could create stuff that doesn't sound like anything else, because it's just us making stuff up. And that's really a very, very special and rewarding place for me.
I saw two things. I saw an interview from a few years ago when you were talking about 2020's album, Share the Wealth. You said, believe it or not, music is not easy for you. But a little bit later on, you were talking about touring and how touring is not necessarily hard for you. Once you're out there and playing, it's a joy. And it made me wonder about how those feelings bump into one another. The challenge of making the music and the joy that eventually comes with it. Where does the difficulty end and the fun begin?
Well, the fun begins for me when there's sound happening.
Okay.
Really, I mean, it sounds possibly a little bit ridiculous, but I'm serious. Mm-hmm. And I've said this before, but I mean, I'm the guy that even looks forward to sound check, you know, on a Wilco tour, you know, and that's not everybody's favorite part of touring, you know, but I get to, but I get to plug in my stuff and sound comes out, and then we all start playing. We go through some stuff. We're playing songs. And I'm in my happy place. It's really kind of bonehead. The difficulty comes with the desire to honor the structure, mm-hmm. to play the notes that are intended. I kind of go into a zone once we get going, where I'm kind of just in my own world. As far as I don't look at the audience, I'm not trying to read the audience per se. I just have to bear down and concentrate. The only thing that feels natural to me is spontaneous improvisation, and everything else is is me just trying to climb on the, you know, the hay wagon and make it to the end without falling off the truck.
I think you managed it, Nels. I think that's a skill you have in spades.
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, I many incredible musicians I know in the course of my life. It's kind of unbelievable because, you know, it's this garage rock kind of know-nothing guitar player until I was in high school. I had to try to learn music because I started listening to John Coltrane and Miles Davis, and of course, along with that, some what we call progressive rock. That's also probably when I heard, maybe 72, when I heard like the Yes album and Fragile, you know, that our friend Lee turned us on to. And so Steve Howe became a really big figure for me. And that's how I taught myself how to play with all my fingers, because I used to just play with two fingers. And so I watched him, and I saw pictures of him and of Julian Green, the great classical guitarist, one of my heroes, and Ralph Towner. And I watched their hands and tried to teach myself how to use all my fingers. And that was a big change, and a good one, but it didn't make it any easier for me to learn music. It just meant that I could play some of the notes that I was hearing in my head. And then, you know, there are the whole effects pedals talk. There are timbral considerations, and you know, I'm pretty good with the pedals thing, but that's yet another option, you know. Right. So if you have so many options with the electric guitar that it's thrilling in one way and possibly confusing or daunting,
yeah,
in other ways, you know, but it's fun to try.
You're listening to World Cafe. We're talking with Nels Klein. His new album is Concentric Quartet. We've talked about a lot of different pieces from the record. Is there anything from this album, an album of yours, or maybe just something you'd like to hear to send us out with for this piece?
We could go dark, okay? And I'm not even in a bad mood, but there is a piece on the new record called Inner Wall that's not too long, and it's a rather pensive, another pensive one that ends in a kind of thunderous minor chord. Tom Rainey gets to completely go off. This was, by the way, recorded, this all this mad drumming you hear him doing, this recorded the day before he went in to have a hip replacement. It's a performance. That's the thing. There's a saxophone doubling on the repeating melody at the end, and I think I added one a looped drone to just enhance the overtones on the last chord. But everything else is a performance, and I think every once in a while I have these realizations when I listen to something that sounds so produced. Like a lot of Share the Wealth, it's like, wow, they must have spent years mixing this with all these crazy effects going on, but they're just live performances. So so I kind of treasure the feeling that I get from Inner Wall and the fact that it's you know, a live performance.
Very rad. Nels, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Stephen. It's a real honor. Thank you.
Nels Klein, the new album Concentric Quartet is available now. We're back in a minute with more World Cafe. Welcome back. It's World Cafe. What a treat. What a gentleman. Nels Klein. New album is Concentric Quartet. It's available now. If you missed any of the conversation, you can find it at worldcafe.org. Hat tip to our producer for this session, Miguel Perez. Now, I don't know how much TV you follow, but Grey's Anatomy is in its 21st season. And in a different version of reality, Tegan and Sarah would have had the theme song. They recently talked about passing on the opportunity because they were busy in the middle of a tour, having a breakout year. However, the show still used several songs from the duo over the course of the series, including this one. Here's Back in Your Head.
Inside of you, I've been on my dreams about it last night, and it
Seems like Haim was in a long-term relationship with that track for several years. Relationships, the song you just heard, yeah, it took almost 7 years to finish. And who hasn't taken years to end one of those? Ooh. New album from Haim is called I Quit. It's due out June 20th. I don't quit. We continue in a moment with more World Cafe. You're listening to World Cafe. Lucy Dacus was inspired by a trip to one of the quirkiest museums in the country. And if you've been to the Barnes in Philadelphia, you know what I'm talking about. Feels like you've walked into a house with some of the greatest art ever created. We talked about that experience and the classical art that inspired her latest album, Forever is a Feeling. You can hear it at worldcafe.org. New music from Lucy Dacus, Medigliani.
Loving father, friend and son. Printed backwards on my shoulder blade from leaning back on a plaque on a bench. I carry David's name until it fades. Why does it feel significant? Why do I have to tell you about it? Trying to fall asleep back flat on the floor while you were eating continental breakfast. Singapore, you make me homesick for places I've never been before. How'd you do that? How's tomorrow so far? Meeting your family was a trip, seeing what you got from them, for better or worse, a blessing and a curse. You don't need to love them, but you do. Can take off a year or two. We'll all be here when you get back. When you told me about your new man, it wasn't news, cause you've got all these mannerisms that you never do, like rolling your eyes and laughing real dry, like you were trying him on for size. Even if it doesn't fit, you'll wear it. Cause if it's what you want, you're gonna get it. I've heard this anecdote at least a dozen times. Yeah, I know every word and inflection as if it were mine. I like watching you win over a new crowd. You can make them go wild, you can leave them spellbound, but you will never be famous to me. We'll be right back.
Programming on KSDP is supported by the Schumigan Corporation. Located in Sandpoint, the Schumigan family of businesses includes property and equity management, the Sandpoint Tavern, the Anchor Inn Motel, and the Anchor Inn Lounge. The Schumigan Corporation, serving its shareholders and the people of Sandpoint, on the web at www.schumigan.com or by telephone at 907-383-3525. The Schumigan Corporation. Hometown values and service. A proud sponsor of KSDP.
watch her smoke, boy. Hear that engine hum and lordy, take